Is now Dr. Bill O'Brien.
Bob Kincaid, thank you. Thank you so much, and it is a pleasure to be here at the Virtual Center. I was experiencing a little bit of
it's like victory. A little bit of victory today, according to Pat Sims over at the Wall Street Journal. She says, quote, in her tweet, Wisconsin Dem Senator Chris Larson says, today he expects three Republican senators to soon request that the budget repair bill be withdrawn. That means that all of the toxic stuff we've been talking about that are in this bill, they're talking about withdrawing. Now, you got to look across the country and you got to see other governors looking to this and go, well, you know, this is how you do not run a major policy campaign. Scott Walker has pretty much shown his amateur status. He's playing in the little fishbowl out here in the sea. Got himself into a whole lot of trouble, and there's talk of a whole lot more trouble coming down, according to some sources who are looking at this prank phone call. What's interesting? He wouldn't take a phone call from any of the Democrats. But he will take a phone call from a prankster who he believed to be the conservative billionaire David Koch. One of the Koch brothers, the billionaire family who's funded many of the ultra-extreme conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all those attack groups. That's where the money's coming from. And what's interesting, I got to be honest, it's amazing to me that you look at the fact that this guy won't take a call from Democrats, but he'll pick up the phone and talk to somebody who believes is David Koch, which right immediately pops into my head. How often is David Koch calling Scott Walker? How much communication are they having? How frequently does this happen? And how much money is going into this guy's pocket? They talked for about at least 20 minutes. Which, again, kind of, if you're in the middle of the battle of your life as governor of this state, are you going to take 20 minutes out of your day to talk to just anybody? No. You're going to talk to the guy who's filling their coffers. You're going to talk to the guy who's got the messaging machine and can bring tens or 20 or hundreds of buses of thugs here to protest the Indian people here like they did last Saturday with all these tea twizzlers who came to town looking for trouble. Every person that I talked to who was here on Saturday said those tea baggers, they were there for trouble. They were hyped up. They were geared up. They had their cameras and their video recorders. They had everything ready. They were praying. In fact, they had, from what I was told, they had been trained on how to get people to react. And amazingly, the people of Wisconsin didn't react. And what I love to hear is the governor say, well, all these people are, from outside of here. They're thugs from outside. No. The nice people of Wisconsin, they took the brow beating that the tea twizzlers gave them and let them go on their merry way. And it speaks testaments. It's volumes about how nice these people are and how this is a community thing, not just a special interest thing, as the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media is trying so desperately to frame this. to frame it as, wow, this is just the last throes of special interest. No, these are tens of thousands of working families.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, say that we've pretty much covered it. The other issue is a little bit more amorphous than that. It could go on for a while. They are related, both of them, to the virtual center here. The second one, the one that I think could go on for a while, is actually some copy that I've been working on the virtual center itself. And over the weekend, one of the things that I concluded, I had thought about this earlier, but over the weekend and in reflecting upon it, it dawned on me that there's absolutely no better place that I can think of to go and take this than here to the virtual center, because it's the input and the kind of response, suggestion, and constructivism that I receive from those of you who on occasion pick up the phone and actually respond to that really helps define the virtual center. And that's really what I've taken on. I've kind of found myself looking at an opportunity which doesn't come along all that often. A very, very good friend of mine who I work with for years in higher education is a partner in a fairly substantial grant that has been money that has been allocated for the purposes of funding startups for new businesses here in West Virginia. And the whole purpose of this grant money is to try to assist new enterprises with whatever kinds of expertise and technical assistance might be necessary to get these operations up and running, off the ground, and in the case of for-profit institutions, profitable. Among the things that are services that would be provided and paid for under this grant opportunity are included the development of a website, and more significantly, perhaps, the development of a mobile app, which would give people an opportunity.
Beginning, he starts off talking about this guy named Tim Cullen, who's a Republican who, you know, he's pretty sure he's got him in his pocket. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. And Koch goes, oh, all right, I'll have to give that man a call. And what's interesting is Walker goes, well, wait a minute. Well, actually, in his case, I wouldn't call him. I'll tell you why. He's pretty reasonable, but he's not one of us. So I would let him be. Meaning that he's not willing to play the game that the Koch brothers and the Walkers and the Kasichs and, you know, I dare say the Corbetts and the Daniels are playing. You know, I look at this and it's just amazing stuff. And, you know, then he goes into what his plans are. You know, he's saying, well, we're just going to starve them out. They're going to have to come pick up their paychecks at some point. And, you know, we're gonna threaten the workers next week. We're gonna send out warning letters that they're all gonna be laid off. And, you know, all this trickery, all of this deceit, all of this backdoor politic, all of this nonsense that they're, you know, that they've already decided to do, I'm sure months and even years ago. But the whole planning trouble thing to me just grabbed me. And the other part that I thought was interesting is they've been talking about PATCO too. And as we've been saying on the program, PATCO was that moment during 1981 where businesses said, whoa, wait a minute, that's our guy in the White House. He just gave us the green light to go ahead and crush those workers. So he's talking about PATCO, and it's pretty interesting because he says, you know, well, basically this was Reagan breaking down the Soviet Union. when the Soviets saw Reagan go after his own workers and what he would do to them, they were afraid of him. And he was trying to take some of that and say, look, that's what we need to do. We need to stand up and be firm here, and we need to take them on and destroy them as we would any of our political enemies, take them into the square and gut them in public. This is what they're trying to do. This isn't about saving the budget. This isn't about helping taxpayers. This isn't about better governance. This isn't about any of that stuff. This is revenge. This is hatred. This is political payback. Pure and simple. And I find it quite interesting that you look at the fact that they're talking about in this one piece of legislation so much destruction, so much toxicity, so many handouts. Privatizing their power plants, getting rid of the Badger Care like our adult basic. This destruction of union rights, of really a voice. Even though the people have already said we're willing to give whatever needs to be done to balance the budget. I mean, the workers have already said we're willing to chip in. And I always go back to it, and I don't understand it. I really don't. How it is that asking for wealth to be redistributed in a way that benefits everybody and not just a handful. How in the hell is that socialism? But yet, when we've got to pick up all the pieces after the banks and Wall Street and the billionaires like the Koch brothers destroy our economy, somehow, Jake, that is somehow patriotic. Us getting the broom and the shovel and cleaning up all the mess that they've left.
Well, I think the irony is, Rick, I think some of them have overstated their case. I think this is a classic example of the enemy going a bridge too far. He's showing some real cracks. Talking to some people at the rally tonight, Rick, you get the feeling that from the inside, the information is slowly coming out that some of his Republican colleagues aren't necessarily on the same team as he is. They're not as hardcore. They're more centrist because they are conservative, but they're more centrist conservative. They're getting an awful lot of heat, and they're starting to get cold feet. One thing that Walker said, he's going to wait them out. I think this time is on the side of the workers.
Well, I hope you're right, because, you know, every day you're seeing thousands of people, you know, marching into the Capitol, people who are staying overnight, people who are dedicated to this. And when we come back a little later in the program, I want to talk about the media comments that he made, because, you know, even he admits, you know, fake news on Fox is in their pockets. He's doing all the shows, all the good conservative shows, to keep all of the minions in line, to keep all of the simple, right marching down the path towards the end. And what's interesting is the end is for all of us, even the ones who are supporting him. And that's the thing that bothers me, that this fight, you know, and we've seen only a handful of people who have had anything bad to say. And, you know, we saw the teabagger guy walking around, and people were, hey, how you doing? You know, it was just the nicest event here. But at the end of it, we're all in this together. All in this together. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the ads that the governor asked for and some of the help that he asked for from the Koch brothers. Is that legal? We're going to find out from our good friend, Irwin Aronson. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The National Labor Relations Board is investigating an appeal filed by the United Auto Workers in the VW plant union election in Tennessee. The UAW appeal is over the interference of politicians and outside special interest groups. The UAW objections filed with the NLRB detail a coordinated and highly publicized campaign by politicians and outside groups that the union says was coercive. UAW says that anti-union campaign deprived VW workers of their federally protected right to form a union. VW worker Lauren Feinauer says the politicians' campaign essentially said, if you unionize, it's going to hurt your economy. Why? Because I'm going to make sure it does. She called it an underhanded threat. UAW President Bob King says it was extraordinary interference in the private decision of the workers, and he vowed to stand with VW workers to ensure their right to have a fair vote without coercion and interference is protected. If the NLRB fines for the UAW, the board could set aside the union election results and order a new election. The Detroit City bankruptcy plan cuts city worker pensions by as much as 34%. The pension hit for police and firefighters is 10%. The plan includes deep cuts in retiree health care and eliminates the pension cost of living adjustments over time. Bondholders will be issued new bonds with 20% of what they're owed. The Republican-appointed emergency manager Kevin Orr's bankruptcy plan was released on Friday. AFSCME Council 25 President Al Garrett says the plan is a gut punch to Detroit City workers and retirees. Orr says he wants a negotiated settlement that could slightly decrease the pension hits. A legal battle in bankruptcy court is likely now before a final resolution is reached. Detroit's pension fund's spokesperson, Tina Bassett, expressed great disappointment and said the plan contains debilitating and unnecessary pension cuts. Bassett says Detroit can afford much better treatment to people that dedicated years of their lives to serving the city. Bondholders are not happy that the plan discriminates against them and other investors, so legal battles are expected from them as well as from unions on behalf of retirees. Equal pay, access to paid sick and family leave, and quality health care will be among the issues at the New Jersey AFL-CIO's 11th Annual Women in Leadership Development, or WILD, conference, March 7th and 8th. AFL-CIO Secretary-Treasurer Liz Schuler will be the keynote speaker. Laurel Brennan, Secretary-Treasurer of the New Jersey AFL-CIO, says women are still falling behind in the workplace, and the way for women to fight back is by using collective energy to push for progress on key women's issues. She says that conference in Brunswick, New Jersey, will help empower and educate union women to overcome these challenges. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
But, you know, that's what the people here in Madison, Wisconsin are doing and have been doing for the last, week and a half. They've been standing, they've been marching, they've been clapping, dancing, singing, having a festival out here. But they are here for a very good reason, and they all know that. But, you know, at the end of it, they can still have a good time. I think it was Emma Goldman who said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. Well, these folks are definitely doing that. You know, the Koch brothers in this state are pretty powerful folks. They gave Scott Walker's campaign $43,000 directly. You remember the Koch brothers gave $1 million to the Republican Gubernatorial Association, the Governor's Association, so they could buy attack ads. It turns out they're spending $320,000 on television ads for this right here. How's that legal? I'm not sure, but that's why we're going to have our good friend Erwin Aronson, our favorite attorney, to come on the program. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for you taking time to be out in the place where God's work is being done, and you and your crew are right there. That's fantastic. Yeah, I feel almost as if I should be the host and I should interview you tonight, because I need to know what's going on right there in the heartland of America, at the place where Ground Zero has been reestablished for all of us.
It is absolutely an amazing atmosphere. Tens of thousands of people marching in the streets. And like I said, it is a festive occasion. But people are deadly serious about what they're talking about. They've got they want the governor to walk away from this this theft of their rights.
Well, it's understandable, and you're being charitable by calling it a theft of their rights. It certainly looks a lot to me as if someone in the North is trying to reenact the old South, and we should all be under the thumb of Massa, and Massa looks a whole lot like Governor Walker.
Yeah, or like David Koch. Because
an interesting one, David Koch. You know the Koch brothers, they inherited their money. They earned it the old-fashioned way, you know?
Yep.
And the Koch brothers are trading in Wisconsin and all around the country on that really wonderful little piece of Supreme Court jurisprudence that was enacted last year called Citizens United, which stands for this insane proposition that corporations are people too. And because we have a right to free speech under the Constitution, as people are allowed to give unbridled amounts of money to support their political agendas.
Well, let me
That's
ask
what
you,
the Koch brothers are doing.
Let me ask you this, Irwin, though. I understand that was the decision. But in this case, if you listen to the call, which, again, I don't know if you've heard, but it's amazing at how at ease Walker is talking with David Koch and is perfectly okay with the fact that one of the Koch brothers just called him out of the blue. But he had the security of knowing that he could ask this billionaire to run ads and spread the message and do the kind of things that Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all these attack groups have been doing and put out their message. Is that legal that a sitting governor can ask one of these hate think groups or whatever you want to call them to go run ads for him?
Well, it's certainly... The request itself is certainly not illegal given the breadth of the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. The question about legality is, where was Walker when he did this? Was he in the people's house? Was he sitting in the governor's office on the governor's phone pursuing this political agenda? Because he admitted in that response to what was, in effect, a phony phone call that that's exactly what this was, a political agenda. He was looking for bragging rights because he thought he lit a national fuse for the agenda that they're pursuing. And indeed, he's part right. He did light a national fuse. And people are gathering in every corner of the United States right now. But one would think, certainly here in Pennsylvania, we would know because the current governor and former attorney general has prosecuted members of the General Assembly, Democrats and Republicans alike, for using their legislative offices to pursue political business. And if Walker did the same thing, it certainly would be criminal conduct in Pennsylvania, according to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett.
So in bringing up Corbett, the reality is what's going on here in Wisconsin, and what I've been saying all week, this is that the front lines of the class war, will this latest battle in the class war. If things were to go the way Walker wanted them here in Pennsylvania, or I mean here in Wisconsin, I do believe they would surely sweep across the country, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, at some point down the road. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, very clearly, if you listen carefully to the conversation that Governor Walker thought he had with one of the billionaire Koch brothers, he was going down the list of governors, and he didn't get to Pennsylvania in the course of that conversation before the caller who had represented himself to be David Koch moved on in the conversation. But certainly Pennsylvania is at risk. People like Representative Metcalf in Pennsylvania are introducing right-to-work legislation in the Pennsylvania General Assembly even as we speak. The moderate Republican who had been minority chair of the House Labor Committee during the last session when the Democrats had majority control of the State House did not succeed in becoming the chair of the Labor Committee when the Republicans took over. A very different person was placed in that role. And we have some certain issues in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. There are forces at work who have been financed by the same big business community that stands to benefit by this kind of law, this kind of legal approach. It's for somebody like me, it's almost anathematic to refer to it as a law. It is a political agenda. It's not a law. But the danger is here, it's now, and it's real, and I think that's precisely why so many Pennsylvanians have been intrigued enough and excited enough and interested enough and just focused enough to stand in solidarity with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin and in Indiana and in Ohio and in Michigan and in Kansas, where the Koch brothers' headquarters can be found, and are speaking up. I'm reminded tonight, as we are on the verge of day 10 of this, of the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Light the Fire. They lit this fire.
Yeah.
But it's burning. And it's always been burning, and they just opened it up. And the winds are blowing that fire across the country, and we will face challenges, and we will meet and greet those challenges, not with joy, but certainly with vigilance and diligence, and we're going to overcome these challenges. I keep asking people to help me understand if this Walker guy is to be believed. His story is that we need to do these draconian things like automatically decertify unions and abrogate collective bargaining agreements and compel unions to have elections every single year to be recertified as something having something to do with balancing the budget. And I can't understand it. But what I really can't understand is if he is such a good heads-up, understanding, competent manager, why does he need a law to say no to the labor organizations that exist there? He can't do it himself. He needs the cover of a statute to do that. He doesn't know how to negotiate, or he's afraid to negotiate. He's afraid that even he would give in somehow to reasonable demands, that he needs a law. I ask people to do the mirror image of this. Imagine, if you will, with me for a moment, that if in Wisconsin a liberal Democratic governor was elected and had substantial liberal progressive majorities in the state house and state senate, and they faced an unbalanced budget, they faced a budget deficit, and the thing they did was increase unemployment compensation benefits and dramatically liberalize eligibility, and the next thing they did to finance that was to impose a big new tax on corporations doing business there for everybody except maybe a progressive-leaning tech sector that is developing there. And then for good measure, have a ban on corporations and corporate players like the Koch brothers from making political donations without first getting the permission of each and every one of their shareholders, so that they can't use their power, their economic power, to repeal the appropriate laws that had just been passed because of a decrepit economy and a declining economy. Imagine what that would be, because that's exactly the mirror image of what Walker has proposed.
Right.
You know?
They'd be calling it exactly what I'm calling this. I don't think this is anything but Machiavellian political payback, taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public.
Well, it's not just taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public. It is also saying that you are going to have that enemy for the rest of the history of the country. And therefore, you have to strip that enemy of its right to ever exist again.
Right.
Yeah. You have to say to working people who have chosen to serve us by being public employees, who protect our children, who serve our parents, who take kids to school on the school bus, who shovel the snow on the streets, that they are a permanent underclass in this society. Imagine comparing this to the clarion call of John Kennedy when he was sworn into the presidency of the United States, who recognized that public service was a higher calling and encouraged people to set things aside to adopt that higher calling. Now we have people like Scott Walker who tell us that public service is at one level theft when working people do it and is a way to make millions when he does it for his corporate raider buddies.
And you know, the thing is, and again, going back to this idea that this is something about the budget, you know, the unions here have agreed to concessions. They've agreed to numerous furlough days. The workers, you know, they're still willing to chip in and tighten their belts. This isn't about the budget. This isn't about any of that. It's about control. Let me ask you this, Irwin. You know, one of the things that Scott Walker talked about in his phony phone call that he thought was real was the Patco strike. Or was the Patco firings? I think there should have been a strike, but the Patco firings that happened, he looked at that as a great thing. And this is one of the first times I think a Republican has come out and said, well, this was a good thing, and it was a good thing we did it, and it's what brought down the Soviet Union. It gave Reagan all this power. You know, because basically he made the Soviets say, well, look what he does to his own people. What do you think he'll do to us? I'm curious, you were heavily involved during the time of the Patco strike and the firings. Give me a little background on this.
Well, the relationship of this action of Scott Walker's to balancing a budget, candidly, Rick, is somewhat like a dog's relationship to a fire hydrant. And the relationship that his immediate action now has to the Patco situation is less than non-existent. We need to remember that here, he proposed to balance a budget by doing two sets of things. One was a series of givebacks, takeaways, abrogations, decimations, if you will, of existing collective bargaining agreements with public sector employees, representatives. In the Patco situation, Reagan just fired everybody. Patco never offered to deal with those concessions. Concessions were never on the table. Here, Walker has this situation where he asked for concessions. The labor organizations representing their members have announced that they'll accept those concessions. And he still says he has to destroy their organizations. And these are two very different things. And the fact of the matter is that, if the truth be told, Reagan's action did do something. And it did the same kind of something that Scott Walker is trying to effectuate, and that is bring Reagan closer to his corporate sponsor buddies, just like Walker's trying to get closer to his corporate sponsor buddies. But it didn't do anything for air traffic control. It made the airways less safe, and they remain less safe now, 31 years later. It caused chaos in the skies. It caused chaos in the country. And you know, the Soviet Union did come down, but it had precious little to do with Ronald Reagan. You know, a speech that said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, wasn't exactly the same as Jack Kennedy standing at that wall on the other side and saying, Ich bin ein Berliner. This was not a visionary political step. This was a crude, ham-fisted punch in the face to people who had served their country.
Okay, I agree. You know, here's the thing. I want to bring this back home to Pennsylvania, this whole scenario here. Here, the reports that I'm getting is they have a third Republican senator who wants Bill withdrawn and to start over. I look at Indiana, where the governor there and the Republicans have agreed to withdraw the right to work bill. But the Democrats in Indiana are saying, we want the vouchers off the table as well. So bringing this back to Indiana, to Pennsylvania, you see what's going on here in Wisconsin, there in Indiana. What can we help our Democratic minority accomplish when we've seen that the minority parties in both of these states have had some success?
Well, I think that you have to recognize that in Pennsylvania, and this may be true for the other jurisdictions as well, the other states as well, but I'm not sure because I'm not familiar enough. The Republican Party in Pennsylvania right now is under the yoke of a tyranny of its own minority. Many of the leadership of the Republican Party, particularly in the State House of Representatives, are not from the mainstream of Pennsylvania's Republican Party. And as a labor movement, I iterate and reiterate that while I happen to be a Democrat, we are Democrats and we are Republicans. We support our friends and we oppose our enemies, regardless of their political affiliation.
Correct.
And so it's really not a question of what can the minority party do. It's a question about what kind of majority of right-thinking, contemplative Pennsylvania legislators, Democrats and Republicans, do to stop and hold back the tyranny of the minority and use that tyranny in its best form as Americans to not only stop this evisceration of the right of one sector of society to live by another sector of society, but to move the ball forward, to advance our society, to do something, imagine, make progress. Make progress for all the things that government exists to take care of. Government, of course, exists to take care of things that we can't take care of on our own. We can't adequately take care of educating our children on our own. That's why we have a public school system. It should be the great equalizer, the great leavener, if will, in a democratic society. And maybe, just maybe, this helps us down that road. Maybe this situation helps us to deal with the idea that we're facing this absurdity of wanting to divest the citizens of Pennsylvania, the shareholders, if you will, of Pennsylvania, of a very successful business that brings in $400 million a year to our state treasury, the state wine and spirit store system. Maybe we have some opportunities here, but maybe what we need to do is keep our eyes open and our heads up and recognize that we happen to be blessed with, in Wisconsin, for example, 14 good and true, loyal Democratic senators who are standing up with us on this issue. But there are also two Republican senators, I understand, in Wisconsin, who are standing up with us on this issue, and now possibly a third.
Right.
That doesn't make this a Republican issue. This makes this a lunatic issue.
Excellent, okay? Excellent point.
And Scott Walker is a lunatic. When you reach for the big brass ring 6 or 8 weeks into your first real major political foray in your life, you better hope you catch it, because it's a very long and rapid fall.
Good point. Irwin, I appreciate your thoughts, your comments. Always great to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you, and please keep us posted on what's going on at what I call Ground Zero, and we'll see you back here safe and sound, I'm sure, real soon, but don't leap too early, because we need to have the real reports, and we get those real reports from the Rick Smith Show.
Thanks so much, Irwin. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight's program is a look back 3 years ago today as the assaults in Wisconsin ramped up and it became apparent that workers' rights were under attack. This program is an important look back because it shows us how we got to where we are today. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any comments, we'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for tuning in.
The uber rich are full of ideas. Not, unfortunately, ideas to help humanity, but to help themselves grab more money and power at our expense. Take Tom Perkins. He's one of a growing number of the put-upon rich. Billionaires who've grabbed a fabulous fortune by hook or crook, but now complain that they are victims of a rising tide of hatred. Excuse me, Tom, but the words billionaire and victim are not a natural pairing. Yet, even though he candidly concedes that he lives a life of vulgar excess, Perkins wrote a sob story letter in January to the Wall Street Journal pleading for relief from the, quote, war on the American 1%, namely the rich. He was roundly ridiculed for that, but he's since come back with a pragmatic idea for redressing the grievous plight of the put-upon 1%ers. What's needed, he explained, is a slight tweaking of America's democratic election system. The Tom Perkins system, he lectured, is you don't get to vote unless you pay a dollar of taxes. But what I really think is, it should be like a corporation. You pay $1 million in taxes, you get 1 million votes. How's that? Gosh, so much vanity and ignorance crammed into only 3 sentences. Apparently, no one has informed Tom that poor people pay a larger percentage of their income in various taxes than do privileged tax evaders like him. Nor does he seem aware that a democratic government cannot be anything like a corporation, for government must serve the whole public, while a corporation is an autocratic hierarchy that serves only a few. And golly, Tom, why should you and all of your billionaire buddies get anything special, like extra votes, just for paying taxes? What you get in return for taxes is what we all get, civilization. This is Jim Hightower saying, I thought I would write to Tom about his plan, but then I realized I don't know how to spell. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show. Fascist, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight.
You fascists abound. You know, that is absolutely the absolute truth. As people are standing together, as people are rising up, as they are fighting back, we're seeing success all across the country. You look at Indiana, they've decided to pull the right-to-work legislation. And in Ohio, I've heard there's talk that they're changing their bill, the SB5, to take the collective bargaining attack out of it. In Pennsylvania, we're not seeing those attacks yet, and maybe we won't. Maybe they will have learned the lesson from here in Wisconsin that politically, this isn't going to fly. That the people actually want to have a voice on the job. That the people actually want to become part of a union. And you know, the people over at Fake News at Fox, they never stop, never. Because yesterday we talked about the USA Today Gallup poll that was released and that said 61% of the people oppose what Walker is doing. They oppose the stripping of collective bargaining rights away. They oppose stealing these rights away from workers. They oppose it. So what does Fake News on Fox do? They put up a big graphic on their scene and it says that most 61% of the people favor stealing collective bargaining rights. Oh, they're thrilled to death with it. And during the discussion, that Kilmeade, you ever seen that guy? He asked Robert Zimmerman if President Obama was taking a big risk by opposing Walker's law. And Zimmerman responded by saying that Obama was speaking up for the mainstream of our country and the mainstream of Republican governors who are not siding with Governor Walker. And Kilmeade said, well, I think Gallup, a relatively mainstream poll, has a different view. And he came out with the numbers. Said, well, you know, they're all in favor of stealing it away. And, of course, he's wrong. Dead wrong. But, again, the people who are the Fox, the Fake News on Fox listeners, the viewers that they have, they're not going to check it. And they're going to take it at face value because that's how they are. And I mean, you know, are we surprised? Are we really surprised that Fox News does this? And, the thing is this kind of stuff happens so frequently. Either they've hired the last guy in the journalism class. They hired they hired the guy with ADD who cannot keep his mind on anything. And he screws up everything. Either they've hired him or they're doing this stuff on purpose. It's one or the other. And I'm saying they do it on purpose.
No, they absolutely do. If I can comment on the governor's so-called knowledge of the people who are coming into this state for the organizing, the organizing their efforts going on here in Madison. I mean, to really infer that most of these people are from out of state, just to give you an idea how far off base he was. I mean, you and I, since we've been here, Rick, we've been going to demonstrations. First time in 3-4 days, I was lucky to actually get, you know, in the inner sanctum tonight. And it started about 5, and they started to rally. And about 6 o'clock, After about an hour of the rally, all of a sudden, here comes this policeman's group. Out of nowhere, a couple dozen of them with signs, cops for labor, and all of a sudden there's this huge outpouring of noise, and the place went nuts. Five minutes later, and they were still chanting and singing. You know how it goes, on and on and on. It's a great experience, actually. But this old man was getting tired after about 20 minutes of that. But my point is this. There was actually, and I think our listeners have been interested in this, there was actually a unionized doctors group that came in.
Yep.
And I didn't even realize that in this area they had them. So for this governor to say that these are outside agitators, these are doctors and policemen, two of the most respected professions, in the country, from right here. But yet, here's the governor saying it's outside agitators. I can guarantee you that is not so. We met a few. We did meet a few. We met a few union guys. No, we met a few union guys from Chicago, a couple here and a couple there, but the vast, vast, vast majority are from Wisconsin, I guarantee you.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. If you want to contact us, we're having phone trouble here. If you want to contact us, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will get your email up on the air, and we'd love to hear from you from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Coleman Lowndes. After facing criticism from just about everyone, including Republican politicians, Ted Nugent offered a disingenuous apology for his comments calling President Obama a subhuman mongrel. Here he is on the Ben Ferguson Show.
Did you cross the line by calling the President of the United States of America that? And if you saw Barack Obama, would you apologize to him for saying that about him?
Yes, I would. I did cross the line. I do apologize, not necessarily to the president, but on behalf of much better men than myself.
Even if Nugent's apology had been sincere, it is just one example in his long history of racist, sexist, and anti-immigrant commentary. Last year on the Alex Jones Show, Nugent claimed African Americans could fix, quote, the black problem if they just put their heart and soul into being honest, law-abiding, and delivering excellence at every move in your life. In the past, Nugent has also compared Obama to a Nazi, used the C-word in reference to Hillary Clinton, and said that if someone is a suspected undocumented immigrant, he'd, quote, like to shoot them dead. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
All these folks here, they're absolutely fired up. I got to tell you, today we were over at the Capitol again. A rally, a chance of this is what democracy looks like. All of the people coming together peacefully, having their voice heard. An amazing, amazing time. And what I found most interesting is that the working people of this festival, if you will, I hesitate to call it a protest. I mean, these are citizens of Wisconsin who've come to their government and said, hear us, and they have come, and amazingly, this is what democracy looks like. These are families who came, and you know what they did? They set up a child care area on the first floor of the Capitol building for the citizens who are here, who brought their children, who want to get into the as close as they can get, who want to be a part of it. They've got a child care area. That, my friends, is what democracy is. It's people deciding what they need and how they're going to go about fulfilling those needs. And this is a lesson that I think Scott Walker and people like Daniels and Kasich and our guy, Tom Corbett, have to think about. What are the things that the citizens of Pennsylvania demand of their government? How do we provide them? How do we pay for them? Not, I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and I'm going to go after my political enemy at all costs. Because that's what this is. That's all this is, pure and simple.
Did you notice, Rick? And I noticed it more and more and more. There's quite a few groups over there that are providing food free for these people. They're so well organized that they're actually providing free. I mean, it was the last mass demonstration that you saw people handing out food. I mean, it might sound trite to some people, but these people are well organized. I can say something else. You know, if you would go in a time warp, back in the 60s, I understand Madison was really the hotbed of anti-war demonstrations. That demonstration we were at tonight, you could probably go back in the 60s, given the young people, given the tone of their dress, given the way it was carried on. It's actually a throwback, and it's not just a demonstration. It's kind of like a happening, and people get involved in that, and it's a great feeling to just be part of that.
And, you know, again, go back to this idea that this is such a peaceful event, that these folks, they're here to have their voices heard, not to cause trouble. Now, the mainstream media, they want they want this trouble. They want something negative to happen. The Tea Party, they came on Saturday with their goons and their cameras trying to cause problems. And, you know, I look at in Indiana where this guy, you know, he's with CWA and had these two kids, really, I mean, they're early 20s, in his face, screaming at him, pointing their camera in his face, and just screaming at him that he's a thug and all of this stuff. And they clip a short segment out of the video where evidently he went to move his sign to block the camera, and somehow the little handheld cell phone camera that they had hit the ground. You know, and the guy wanted no part of them, but they kept at him. They kept picking at him. And the guy didn't hit him. I would have, which is why I don't generally go to these things. Some little smart... Again, FCC rules.
Imagine that.
Some little snot like the two of them would have come into my face and stuck a camera in my face and started pointing their finger in my face. One, I had snapped off their finger and shoved that camera where the sun don't shine. But that would have gotten us into trouble, and that would have gotten the kind of negative exposure that these thugs want. Because in a situation like this, it's whoever causes the trouble. And again, you know, the governor here said he thought about drumming up some trouble. It was on his mind. We already thought about that, he said, when the fake Koch brother said, hey, you know, why don't we drum up some trouble? Why don't we send in some people to cause some trouble? Now, you look at down in Atlanta, for instance. Down in Atlanta, SEIU was holding some rallies at the state capitol. And interestingly enough, there was a group of, well, again, you go back to this and you just, it's almost criminal in my mind. This group called Free Republic, they're one of these way, way out there right-wing groups. They had a memo that they sent out in a post on their webpage. That said, Atlanta Tea Party and many other groups facing off the SEIU thugs on Wednesday. It said members of the various Tea Party 912 and freedom-oriented folks in the Atlanta area will be assembling in the vicinity of the Georgia State Capitol this coming Wednesday after 4 p.m. We'll be providing balance to the ravings of the passengers aboard the SEIU thug bus, which is scheduled to vomit forth its stooges at the same place and time. If you want to join us for the three-hour drive to Atlanta, come on. Now, they go on to say, and again, this is one of those amazing things that grabs you by the throat and goes, this is scary times. They write, the advice that attendees are requested to be flexible in your attire. You know, you got to be flexible in your attire. Because there appears to be some regulations, re-armed protests on Washington Street side of the Capitol. So you need to be flexible in your attire. Wink, wink, nod, nod. will attempt, but no promises to get some additional clarity regarding the situation. So, you know, they're encouraging their people to, you know, to arm up, bring your guns, boys. We're going after the thug bus. When, you know, I wonder if these folks looked in the mirror. It's this kind of stuff that scares me. You get these crazy right-wing groups out there who think, oh, we're gonna show them, we're going to bring our guns. And I know there are some who'd say, well, maybe the SEIU people should have guns. And, well, that's how you end up like Libya. And, oh, that's a bit extreme, Rick. Well, you know, I look at Indiana. Jeff Cox, a deputy attorney general for the state of Indiana. He's got his viewpoints about what's going on here in Wisconsin. So in response to a Mother Jones tweet this weekend reporting that riot police might be used to clear the protesters from the Capitol building in Madison, Cox tweeted back, use live ammunition. Think about that for a second. Cox has been one of these people who he's held his position that protesters should be killed when confronted on Twitter by Mother Jones's Adam Weinstein, writing that against thugs physically threatening legally elected state legislators and governor, you're right, I advocate deadly force. And it almost sounds to me, as you go through some of this stuff, because this guy's really way out there on the fringe. He has had a long record of inflammatory rhetoric against people like Robert Reich and especially SEIU, who he's called brown shirts, wrote one time that kill, annihilate. Is this the kind of elected person that you want? I mean, really, is this what we need? I don't think so. And I think Irwin was right. You know, this isn't a Democratic or a Republican issue. This is a sanity issue at this point. Find me reasonable people. Find me people who aren't playing nuts. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, the Lulus on the extreme right, they want nothing but trouble, Jake.
You're absolutely right. I guess my question is, how does someone like this exist in our political system, that he can actually threaten the public with killing them for exercising their constitutional rights and not be destroyed in the political sense? I'm sorry, this isn't a left-right issue. This is just a basic, fundamental constitutional right issue. How is this man allowed to flourish in our system? I don't know that it says a lot for the electorate in that state to allow a man like this to flourish. It just defies logic.
It is what it is. And, you know, when the more I look at this, the more I say, you know, at some point I'm hoping that rational thought comes back. And like Irwin said, in Pennsylvania, maybe we're a little luckier than other states. I'm not really sure that we have a split in the majority party between those who want good governance and those who are just completely off their rockers. That's something that, as you look down the road, is something that may save us.
I don't think Pennsylvania, I've lived all my life in Pennsylvania, even when we had Republican administrations, even when they were Republican conservative, they were mainstream, and someone like this would not be allowed in public office in our state.
Anyway, if you want to contact us, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Again, we're having some